May it please the court. My name is Pamela Lacey, and I'm from Benton, Illinois, and I'm representing Pamela Harris, who was the plaintiff in the district court matter. Mrs. Harris's case was originally filed in Williamson County in state court and removed to federal court by the defendant, Appalee General Motors Corporation. This case is not about a collision that occurred on May 20th, 1997, but rather it is about what occurred immediately after a collision that occurred on May 20th, 1997. Mrs. Harris had a vehicle that she had purchased new, a 1996 Chevrolet Cavalier, what is known as a J-car model, and another lady pulled out in front of her and ran a stop sign. She hit the lady at a fairly low rate of speed. There was construction going on. She was going not more than 20 and had seen the lady and had put her brakes on. And when during the collision, the airbag on the passenger side deployed, but the airbag on the driver's side did not deploy. Mrs. Harris collected herself, saw that the other lady was fine, undid her seatbelt, tried to get out, noticed that her door was locked, and as she was reaching forward to unlock her car door, the driver's side airbag deployed in her face, causing a black eye, facial bruises, neck bruises, arm bruises on her right side, and also displaced the bones in her neck, causing her to undergo a cervical fusion a few months later.
Ms. Lacey, let me ask you a question or two about the evidence here. You have her testimony and the testimony of Mr. Marshall that there was a period of time between the collision and when the driver's side airbag. She says, you know, I was annoyed that my new car was damaged, and so she is able to account for some reflection there, and his testimony does the same. But aside from that testimony, what is there in this record? And I emphasize in this record, because I don't understand you to be appealing the district court's ruling on the motion in limine that excludes the GM recall evidence. So we can't really consider that at this point. What is there in this record, other than the fact that it's late, that would allow you to get to a jury?
The lateness in and of itself allows us to get to the jury. Under these particular circumstances, the circumstantial evidence shows that the product did not work as it was designed to work, and it did not work in a manner in which a person would expect it to work. You would expect the airbags to either go off if there were a significant collision event at the same time. I'm sorry.
And was there a reason you didn't have any expert testimony to that effect?
Real
expert testimony.
I wasn't trial court counsel, but I believe that trial court counsel considered that none was necessary under the particular circumstances of this case, because the evidence that was there, which would be her husband's testimony about the extent of her bruises, the eyewitness testimony that saw the airbags not deploy and heard it deploy later and seen earlier that the passenger side had deployed, and her own testimony, that is absolutely what we were relying on. And if you exclude the smoking guns, if you will, from General Motors.
Right, but I mean, given that recall evidence was there, even though the court couldn't consider it, wouldn't it have been prudent of counsel to try to get an expert to testify?
Yes, I agree, but it wasn't actually necessary.
But you didn't have the airbags either, did you, for the examination?
No, within a few days of the collision, the dealership, the GM dealership, automatically replaces those airbags.
I know, but did she ask that they be retained?
The same day that she sought the advice of counsel in June of 19...
No, at the time she took the car in, did she ask that they be retained?
No, she didn't take the car in at all. She hadn't seen the car until after it was fixed. She was in the hospital, and she didn't even take the pictures of the car or do anything. She just didn't... It would appear that a person just doesn't think in terms of product liability. She's never been involved in a lawsuit. And the day that she spoke with trial counsel, which wasn't me, she immediately went to the General Motors dealership and requested that the airbags be preserved, but it was too late. So she was not in control of where those airbags went.
Wasn't that some year or so after the time?
My recollection is that the record shows that it was in June of 1997 that she sought the advice of counsel, and the accident occurred in May of 1997.
In 97?
Yes.
To 99 then?
Yes. And no, so it was a month later she asked counsel? That's my recollection of what the record says, and my review of the record is it wasn't very much longer after that, when, you know, once she got her bearings. I believe it was June 13th, and if it wasn't that, it was July 13th that she sought the advice of an attorney and went immediately from the attorney's office to the GM dealership, requested that the airbags be preserved, but they were already gone. It was just a matter of course where the GM dealership, whenever airbags had gone off, would automatically replace them. And nobody thought to, at the time, before they were gone, thought to request that they be preserved. I believe that her deposition testimony also mentions GM people coming to her home to look at the diagnostic black box sort of thing that goes off in a car, but we hadn't seen anything about that. Her car was made available to them for their own test. Thank you.
Right. Okay.
Judge Foreman of the District Court, initially there were four claims: strict liability, negligence, warranty claims, and res interloquitur. And there was an initial summary judgment motion, and in response to the motion, among other things, the plaintiff submitted her deposition testimony, her affidavit, her husband's affidavit about the course of her injuries and the type of injuries, a statement from John Marshall, an unbiased eyewitness that she did not know before, and also the deposition testimony of Mr. Marshall, who stated that he saw in the car, saw that she was fine. And Judge Foreman initially denied the motion for summary judgment as to counts 1, 2, and 3, but granted it as to res ipsa on the grounds that res ipsa does not apply as a matter of law to any product liability claim. Later, there was another motion for summary judgment. The same evidence was presented plus more, but relying strictly on these affidavits and the testimony and deposition testimony of the parties and her husband and the eyewitnesses, the motion for summary judgment, the second one, should not have been granted. There was nothing new in GM dealerships or the GM Motors Company's second motion for summary judgment that was not already stated in the first motion for summary judgment. But it was granted the second time and denied the first time with respect to counts 1, 2, and 3.
Is there any evidence in this record that would negate the inference that the collision that caused damage to the car in turn made the airbag go off?
It very likely did. The problem here, though, is that it didn't go off during the collision, but rather well after the collision. Had it gone off during the collision, she would have been in driver's position back, not leaned forward.
Is there any evidence in the record to support your theory that you're giving me now?
Her affidavit, her deposition testimony, and also the deposition testimony of the eyewitness, John Marshall, that saw everything, saw inside the car, saw that she was fine, saw her reach over, and then later...
Saw inside the car at the time that it went off?
No. Actually, these go off at 200 miles per hour velocity. So he did not... Nobody sees it go off. It's a blink of an eye. He heard it go off. He saw initially that it had not gone off, that the passenger side had gone off, and then later, 20 seconds later, he hears the pop and notices that it has gone off now, and remembers that he couldn't understand why the two wouldn't go off at the same time, but that happened. Thank you.
You're into your... All right, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Francis Grant. I represent the Appalachian General Motors. Your Honors, what ended up happening in this case is that we got to the eve of trial literally during the pretrial conference, and Judge Foreman correctly asked counsel for plaintiff, where are we? what are you going to prove in this case? We had filed motions in limine dealing with the recall. We had filed a motion in limine dealing with other incidents, all of which had been produced in discovery by my client. We had also filed, based on the deposition testimony, a motion to preclude Dr. Edward Ironman, who was the only evidence, the only testifying expert in this case, who was going to equate the plaintiff's injuries to a late deploying airbag.
But don't we on this record at least have to, you know, taking the inferences in the light most favorable to the opposing party, we have to take this as a late deploying. She herself recalled what she was thinking after the accident. So we know it deployed after the collision. Know in the sense that one knows such things for summary judgment. And I think you got a lucky break on this motion in limine, but it's not before us. There are all sorts of discussions about late deploying airbags and low-impact crashes like this one, but there you are. It's not here.
Your Honor, one thing about the low-deploying collision, which was raised for the first time, I believe, in this case, in the reply brief. The undisputed facts, Your Honor, which are part of the record before you, which were submitted by both parties to Judge Foreman, both parties admit, Your Honor, that this was a deployment-level collision. This was not a circumstance of a bumper tap into a pole, which was really the subject of part of that recall. This was a deployment-level crash. And Judge Foreman, in his opinion, notes that fact, that the parties concede. This was a crash where airbags would have deployed absent some allegation of defect.
Right, but the point is, I mean, this is why it's so frustrating that there's no expert testimony.
Well,
as a matter of physics, if the airbag is deploying and the person is going forward, the net impact is going to be different than if the airbag is just deploying against an inert object.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And one of the things that was discussed at length in this case was the fact that if you take what plaintiff believes, and her testimony is, I think this is what happened.
She said, I remember these various things.
She doesn't know when that airbag deployed. She remembers the flash.
But she knows it didn't deploy at the moment of the collision. We can't dispute that.
Well, in the context of the summary judgment, Your Honor, I would agree. But
that's
if we
right.
take her testimony as true, Your Honor, she is within inches of that airbag when it deploys. And a lot of the testimony from the biomechanics in this case and the experts who were designated to address performance and design issues on this airbag is, if she's that close to this airbag, she is very, very seriously injured. She has serious damage to her face. She has serious damage to her mouth, her nose, her jaw. It's a tough circumstance, Your Honor, and I think it's well known on the publicity that's out there that if you're within inches of an airbag, which is what she says she has, she is seriously, seriously injured with injury different than what she had in this case. The injuries that she had in this case, as Dr. Ironman testified, there's no real difference between what Dr. Ironman saw in this circumstance and what Ms. Harris had. She was involved in a pretty serious crash with another car where she was belted and the airbags deployed. She had serious pre-existing condition in her neck, and her neck was in fact injured to some extent. And that was a topic of debate between the parties going in the trial. But the bottom line, Your Honor, is they walked into this circumstance and they were totally and completely, as Judge Foreman wrote in his opinion, they couldn't satisfy multiple elements of multiple claims by the time we got to trial. And those are just the individual elements. All of the causation elements were out of the case when Ironman left, when Ironman was precluded. I think Judge Foreman, in his opinion, stated, I'll take what Marshall says, and I'll take what Mrs. Harris says, and I'll give that to the plaintiffs. And he says that's the only evidence they have. But beyond that, there's no evidence in this case of unreasonable danger. There's no evidence in this case that the condition existed when it left General Motors' hands. And then again and again, we get back to the issue of causation. The one aspect, Your Honor, that you raised a moment ago was about the repair of this vehicle. The first motion for summary judgment, Your Honor, dealt with two things that we filed. One was a spoliation claim. We said, given the spoliation in this case, General Motors is entitled to summary judgment. what happened.
But it was a General Motors dealer.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but this was a circumstance where that's where she bought the car from. She was involved in an accident. She said, tow the car back to the dealership.
She was unconscious. Somebody said.
No. Your Honor, if you look at the medical records in this case, one of the things that's interesting is she goes to counsel a month later. She doesn't tell the police who took a statement at the scene. She doesn't take an ambulance who took her to the hospital. And she doesn't tell any of the emergency room personnel, none of these people, immediately after the accident. I was fine, and then this airbag deployed late. The only evidence from these people, and several of them have been deposed, is that she was injured in a collision, a significant collision, with moderate to heavy damage to her vehicle, and that the airbags deployed and that she was belted. That's the evidence from all the people at the scene. The car gets towed to the dealership. She doesn't make any report to anybody, including her insurance carrier. The insurance carrier gets involved and says, fix the car. So the dealership did what they were told. They fixed the car. She goes to see her lawyer about a month later. When the lawyer gets involved, his testimony is, or what he has represented is, he went to the dealership. The dealership said the car's been fixed. We got rid of the stuff we fixed. So we ended up losing all the evidence, which would provide anybody in this case, in terms of the plaintiff trying to prove her burden, some direct evidence of defect. And the fact is, given the circumstances of this accident and given the concessions made by the plaintiff that this was a deployment-level crash, you cannot rule out the crash itself as being a reasonable secondary cause of this incident, as opposed to what the plaintiff said. So I think, Your Honor, from my standpoint, the circumstance is relatively clear. The plaintiff failed on multiple levels to prove significant, not just minor, but significant elements of her claim, and accordingly, I would request that the court affirm the district court's entry of summary judgment. And, Your Honor, one last thing on the subject of experts. In a case like this, particularly with regard to the other incident and the recall, where the allegation is different on its face than the recall itself, and multiple incidents, to me, Your Honor, you're going to need somebody to come in there and provide some nexus for the court, some nexus for the finder of fact. This is what the recall was, and this is what it dealt with. This is what caused the condition that led to that recall, and this is what we have. And I'm able to tie that all together. In this case, it was pretty clear early on that there was a conscious decision made by counsel for plaintiff or the plaintiff not to have experts involved in this case. And Judge Foreman, on multiple occasions at status conferences and during at least the one oral argument on summary judgment the first time we were going through it, said, where are your experts? Are you going to have an expert involved in this? And it ultimately ended up being just Dr. Ironman, who was going to say it was the late deployment. And clearly, in Judge Foreman's opinion, that failed. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Counsel.
With respect to counsel's argument that there was a pre-existing neck injury, the record is completely devoid of any pre-existing neck injury. In any event, if she had had a pre-existing neck injury, which she did not, that would not be admissible under the circumstances of this case under the Voykin, Illinois Supreme Court decision in Voykin. There was no independent medical expert here. The employees, essentially, of GM that filed letters in support of the motions for summary judgment were not medical experts, and to whatever extent they relied on their own review of her medical records, the plaintiff's medical records, they're not going to be qualified to testify in the event of trial. GM's own experts do not say that the recall was impossible. They just say it's a rare occurrence. So we would request that the court reverse the decision of the district court granting summary judgment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel.